Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by PASA Sustainable Agriculture. Register now for PASA's 2024 conference in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Don't miss over 70 educational sessions on farming and food systems, plus an expansive trade show. Learn more at pasafarming.org/HRN2024.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Boys, we're back.
Well, Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year, yeah.
Yeah, 2024. Look at us.
Wow, I haven't seen you guys since last year.
I never thought we'd make it, to be honest.
Hey, man, we're only 9 days in, all right? Don't count your chickens. Don't. If we look back and we're like, oh, remember when Souther jinxed us? I'm going to be really upset. So.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Right.
I hope everybody celebrated their way out. I did in the last 58 days of last year, I did 33 events at Amore Margo to party that room down, and we shut it down on the night before New Year's Eve. So on New Year's Eve, I actually, for the first time in over a decade, had nowhere to be. So I celebrated quietly with some friends, and I think I was in bed by 1 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah, that seemed to be trending this New Year's Eve. I mean, like, I usually spend New Year's with some friends and family, just, at my brother's house, and we eat all the caviar in the North Bay of San Francisco and, drink champagne until we forget about it. But this one was a little bit smaller even than previous years. I think a lot of people kind of took it easy this year, which is, I think, pretty nice. Maybe it's just me and my friends are getting older, and that's what that is.
I was
is,
about but... to suggest that.
Yeah, we can't rule out the fact that, like, oh, people are taking it easier. It's like, no, people that we know are taking it easier.
Yeah.
I wonder what the common factor is.
It seems there were just as many people in Times Square as normal. Yeah, I think it's just the people we associate with.
Right. Well, I mean, it was a great year. I mean, I know that, Amore Margo's, go into the bigger location. Sad to see the small location go, but it's good news, really, ultimately, that you have room for all those bottles that you've acquired. And I do want to say this, for a bar that started as like bitters only bar, to see 13 years later the market share of what is out there and available in that spirit category is impressive. So much so to where you had probably not enough stuff to put in the 240 square feet that you had before, but now you have, there's so many products out there to showcase and champion that you had to expand to a room about four times the size. So
yeah,
I mean, that's just cool.
That's very, you're right. It's incredibly cool. It's pretty humbling. When we started the bar, when I see old photos of the bar in the beginning, I say that it looks toothless because there's so much space between each bottle on the back bar. And now, the bottles are lined up behind one another. You can't even see all the labels, not enough linear space to see them all. And I think we had a lot to do with that. In the beginning, I had to seek out all these Amari and bitters. And then today, people seek me out. So it's the tide has certainly turned for that category.
Yeah. So that's just, proof of a great year and a great run. And I mean, speaking of a great year, I mean, thanks to everyone for voting us into the Tales of the Cocktail Foundation's, Best Broadcast Award. So that's, something to look back on. I always say this, every year I try to look back on the things that happened from the previous year and celebrate that rather than making, resolutions that I'm most likely going to fail, try January. Anything
no,
come to mind?
No.
I did it for about 5 days.
You know my feelings on that. Yeah, no, thank you.
Hard so pass. Yeah, I mean, like, it's just great to reflect on the wins, instead of set yourself up for, that diet that we're never going to get around to, right? So, to me, it's it's a really important time of year to just kind of refresh and not really necessarily think about the bad things that you're trying to fix. Celebrate all the good things that you did, because it's a lot easier to do.
Exactly. And there's one trend that I'm actually glad has died a merciful death over the last few years. I think it was around a little bit before the pandemic, but the pandemic really kind of goosed it, was this whole trend of like, oh, that last year sucked. Like, let's talk about how much it's, I'm just like, no, come on, man. And also like life doesn't get easier. We all know this at a certain point. Like, if last year was hard, this year's probably going to be harder. So like, stop sitting around and complaining about like what a bad time it was, and just like have some good times to, you know, like you said, Damon, like look back on the good times, enjoy yourself and enjoy, I think for all of us in this industry, a little bit of a holiday break, which you don't really get until the calendar rolls over in January. So I for the first time had a night where I'm like, oh, I don't have to go to work. I don't have to do any work from my day job. I don't have any social obligations. So I was like, I think I'm going to take myself to the movies, because I goddamn can. And just enjoy that little break. I would also love to get into what I did for New Year's Eve, but on the advice of my attorney, I probably shouldn't. And also, we should probably go ahead and get to our guests that we have in the studio.
That's right. Today. Yeah. Let's kick off a great new year right here, right now.
Some really cool people. We have the team from Simgani 63 joining us today. So we have Luis Grenier, who is the general manager at Cocktail Real. And then we have cocktail enthusiast and Simgani spokesperson and, Academy Award-winning director Steven Soderbergh joining us. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us about Simgani today.
Oh, thank you for having us, Damon. Good to see you.
Likewise. Yeah, welcome back. It's been since we were on the show 2017. It was the first and last time you were on the show. And that's plenty of time to catch up on, right? I mean, there's been a massive amount of growth with Simgani 63, and I want to hear about it, and I certainly know that our listeners would like to as well. So,
well, let me ask you a question, real talk. Did you think we would still be here?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Now, that's me talking, from my own opinion. But
the I thing can also is, tell I, that answer surprised the two of you that actually work in Simgani.
Well, the reason why.
Guys, you know how this business is.
I do. We all do. Yeah. But the thing is, you've taken an approach to a spirit category that was really unheard of in the United States, unless you're from Bolivia, you didn't know what the hell it was. And so, there's a lot of like celebrity owned spirits companies these days. And for a lot of those brands, I don't really see it, like the hands-on activation with the spirit and with the brand. And what you've done, which I've seen, I saw you doing it 7-8 years ago when we first met, I just don't see that with anyone else with the spirits that they're doing. And it takes a lot more passion to bring a spirit like Simgani into the US and UK markets. It's easy to do a whiskey and a tequila, realistically,
low hanging fruit
in the juice, So, I mean, to me, like, passion's going to show in the end, and it has shown. I mean, like I was saying before we went on air today, I've seen it in so, like, the growth, just my personal experience with it, I've just seen it in so many more places than I would have probably thought. I mean, I knew it was going to stick around, but I didn't know that it was going to grow this much. And I mean, that's for the two of you with the passion that you have for it, just getting it out there and hitting the pavement with it. I mean, you're already a busy enough guy as it is, but but to see your love and passion for it, that is proof enough that, it has legs. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I think, 2023 for Simgani 63 turned out to be a really seminal year for us, because it started with the TTB recognition, and that really solved part of the education problem that you're referring to. Nobody knew what Simgani was. And that's a real obstacle, both in the sort of within the industry, but especially when you're trying to reach a consumer, because people don't want to look stupid when they're trying to order a drink. And the obligation on the part of the people serving that drink to tell the story for you is it's a big ask. And so I think the category just really helped, if not legitimize, at least sort of clue people into the fact that, oh, it's okay that you never heard of this before because it's a new thing. And having the government sort of confirm that just, it really helped. We had a really good year.
Well, for some of our listeners who might not know what Singani is, can we get a little quick primer on what that spirit is and a little bit about where it comes from and how it's made and grown and distilled?
That's where Luis Pablo.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. No, thank you. I'm here.
Luis, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for calling in all the way from Bolivia. Love having you here. Mm-hmm. And we're very excited to hear what you have to say about all the – like the methodology and the reasons and the company that you're with, Casa Real, that's been around for 100 years. So
yeah, always happy to talk about Singani. Singani in general terms is distilled from a wine made out of only Muscat of Alexandria grapes. And it's we in Casa Real we use Cognac Charente pot stills. We do a double distillation. And the main player, I mean, the main protagonist in this story is the Muscat of Alexandria grape, actually, and how it grows in Bolivia at these extreme conditions. And that is the reason why Singani is so different to other spirits. It's like when you drink wine, say a Malbec from Argentina, or you drink a Malbec from other region, it's not gonna be the same.
Sure.
And say you have this grape growing in Bolivia, and the same grape growing at in a different terroir, like the French call it. It's not gonna be the same wine, and pretty much the distillation process is just to take that spirit out of that wine and get the best from that, and that's the main reason why Singani is so distinct.
Yeah,
that altitude puts so much stress on the grapes that they form like a much thicker skin, right? And the skin, we know from drinking wine and tasting wine, the skin is where most of like the aromatic qualities come from. And certainly that probably translates through into the distillation, correct?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, to pull you the map, geographically, Bolivia is right at the center of South America. We're a landlocked country. And at our latitude, it's not common to have grape growing. If you look at the global map, And the reason why we can have grape growing at this latitude is because we are so high up. And we're talking about over 5,000 feet above sea level. And it's not just the altitude provides us to have cold winters. And that adds to the whole grape growing cycle, and thanks to that is why we can grow grapes and make wine and make Singani. If you add that extreme condition because you are so close to the sun, like you said, it thickens the grape, and what happens is that it provides the grape has to protect itself. Mm-hmm. Itself. So what happens? It start creating more antioxidants and different aromatic molecules, and that is why our Muscat of Alexandria is so aromatic. If you would just eat the grape. It's an explosion of aromas and floral and fruity, and it's just delicious. And something that's very important is to put you in context, Bolivia has only 4,000 hectares of grapes total compared to Champagne. Champagne has, I think, over 34,000 hectares.
Right.
So very, very, very small, very, very boutique. But for some extraordinary reason, that grape has like the terroir and has been growing for so many years there that it has accommodated to that.
You know, to me, the brandy category is something that I feel has grown a lot since, well, first of all, classic cocktail, you know, revival and renaissance, that we can give a lot of credit to that, right? For just spirits education and knowledge of consumers. But I think COVID kind of did something too, where it kind of forced people into, you know, your general consumers that were getting excited about these classic cocktails and classic spirits. It kind of forced them into learning about them more at home, mm-hmm. and kind of get a little bit more, kind of experiment and educate themselves more with the different spirit categories. So I guess to give a second part, second part answer to the question, Stephen, like, that I think is another reason why Singani is like really grown too, along with other spirit categories that were lesser known to like the American consumer, because I think just brandy in general is, even though it's arguably the oldest distilled spirit, you know, in a lot of cases, right? For it being around longer than anything else, it's kind of strange that it's misunderstood as much as it is. Because like Luis, you were saying, it's all about this grape and it's about the terroir. Like with, you know, the most ubiquitous, most well-known brandy, which would be cognac, a lot of people don't know what it's made from still, you know. And it's funny that like Uni Blanc being the main grape that goes into it, you know, you never get a glass. You can't order a glass of Uni Blanc at a restaurant or bar, right? But the terroir is an interesting thing because that's in the Grand Champagne region of France. But you go to Italy, the same grape, it's called Trebbiano. So people are a little bit more familiar with Trebbiano. Uni Blanc just goes in one ear, out the other. But I think, you know, once people realize that this is distilled wine, it's like, oh, okay, now I'm starting to get it. There's like a little bit of a light bulb moment. I mean, a lot of whiskey drinkers don't realize that they're drinking distilled beer, you know? So there's really, it's taken these moments of time and, again, passion to get the information out there and the education of these spirits. And especially for something, once you start getting into brandy, like I have I've started diving really deep into it over the past like 4 or 5 years, then you really start seeking out the deeper regions and styles. And you say you use the Charentais pot still and you distill twice. I mean, that's what happens in cognac, you know? There's a lot of shared process, but really what it comes down to ultimately is the raw product, right? It is those grapes and how important they are and how unique they are. And that's what makes this product so cool to me. Because before, when I first tried it, you know, almost 10 years ago, I was like, this is cool. I'm like trying to wrap my head around it. And I'm like, I'm trying to grab it, like the things that I could closely identify it with, like say Pisco. Right. Or any kind of like eau de vie, like Marc de Bourgogne or Grappa, you know, I'm just trying to like figure out this unaged brandy situation. And that's cool to like, you know, put one step, get yourself one step closer to what this is. But it really does come down to the raw material of those grapes, which are fascinating. And, you know, like I haven't been to Bolivia yet, but I really want to check this out. I'm like, just these interesting regions of the world. I mean, I think another part of this, I'm sorry to blab on for a little bit, but what made this, like spirits like this so exciting during COVID too, is that people were grounded. They couldn't travel. So really this was your passport to the world through your glass, right? So it really is cool to be able to experience a part of the world that has been doing this forever. I mean, your distillery is turning 100 years old this year, right? That's insane. And to get this product out there, this category out there, is just, I mean, you're really, this is I keep saying it, but there's so much passion behind this and it's a wonderful product. And I mean, like 10 years for Singani 63, right, Stephen? And 100 years for the distillery? Congratulations. That's amazing. Do you have any parties planned for that?
Well, you know, we actually are kind of putting together a plan for 2025, which will be the official 100-year anniversary of the distillery, to bring some people down to see how Casa Real operates. It's a really beautiful distillery. It's now, is it twice as big now, Luis, as it used to be? You've expanded.
Yeah, it has grown in the past years. And the whole region has, I mean, going back to what Stephen was saying regarding TTV, for us, it has been so significant, and that there are more distillers coming up and looking up for Singani, which is a great thing.
Does it feel like a validation of the spirit category in a way, like for the United States? Or?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, everybody looks to the States for this kind of guidance. And so what I think you'll see for us over the next few years is other countries, entities outside of the U.S. following the lead of the TTB. As anybody knows who's in the industry, it's hard to get the TTP to do this. They don't, their default mode is no.
Right.
And, you know, that was an 8-year process getting that category. So it really, you know, when you talk about brandy, it all, for us, the issue ultimately comes down to the consumer. And the bottom line was that for us, that seeing brandy on the bottle was confusing to people. It was very confusing to young people. Most people don't know what the definition, the actual definition of a brandy is. And a lot of the people that make brandy consider Singani to be unfinished. The fact that it's clear, you know, doesn't align with most people's idea of what brandy is. So, you know, on the one hand, the educational component was frustrating at times, but I have to say, I always felt I'd rather be telling this story and be on a steep hill while I tell it than show up with another vodka.
Right.
At least, what it turns out, how that ends up helping is when we roll up to talk to a new account, you don't have to get rid of anything to take Singani on. It's a new thing. It's a new base spirit, but you don't have to kick anything out. Unlike if I rolled up with a gin. Now you got to determine, well, how many gins can I have? So all the things that at the beginning felt not insurmountable, but really you felt like there were real hurdles. Now, 10 years later, I couldn't be happier with the fact that this is the story that we're telling. This is the product because it's, as you said, Damon, the effort has paid off.
Sure.
And now, you know, now we're in, I look at this now, 10 years in, that we're just starting Act 2. This is Act 2.
Right.
Act 1 was 10 years, and now we're starting Act 2, which is, you know, world domination.
Stephen, I got to ask you the same question you asked me at the top of the show. Did you think you would be here at this point?
Well, I always believed, obviously, in the spirit itself. I think if there were any doubts in the back of my mind, it had to do with my ability to just keep going. It is time intensive. It's very resource intensive. And, you know, every evening I found myself, you know, staring at the ceiling, wondering what I'd gotten myself into. My Rosetta Stone is always, the reaction to the spirit when people try it for the first time. That never gets old. It's always as exciting as it was the first time. And so that kind of, you know, I just keep trying to hang on to that idea and that sensation. So I hope so. I mean, I didn't get in it to get bought out. I got in it because right. I love it and right. I wanted to turn people onto it. So there's, as long as I'm still breathing, there's no scenario in which I'm not central to Singani 63.
Want to cultivate farms and food systems that nourish, heal, and empower? Register now for PASA's 2024 Sustainable Agriculture Conference. Discover resources, services, and products at our expansive trade show and explore more than 70 educational sessions on climate smart practices, food justice, soil health, and more. Featuring a dynamic lineup of speakers, including Reginaldo Hasle-Marroquin, farmer and founder of the Regenerative Agriculture Alliance and CEO of Tree Range Farms, and Reverend Dr. Heber M. Brown III, pastor, community organizer, and founder of the Black Church Food Security Network. Find your community at PASA's 33rd annual conference in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on February 8th through 10th. Register now at pasafarming.org/HRN2024. That's pasafarming.org/HRN2024.
The world is changing faster than ever, and you need a website to go with it. Whether you're a seasoned pro looking to build your following or just starting out with a brand new idea, you need a landing page that's bold, innovative, and uniquely yours.
Whatever your passion, you need a web designer with experience, panache, and heart. We can't help you with any of that. Hi, I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Benson. Are we Silicon Valley tech visionaries? No, we're podcast hosts, and that's basically the same thing. And we're here to tell you about Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Ancestral Agave Syrup is the 100% pure nectar of the agave plant. Now, wait a minute, you're thinking. I've had 100% pure agave nectar. Well, not like this, you haven't.
That stuff is processed with a diffuser, which introduces acid. Plus, it comes from Blue Weber, a monoculture that dominates farms, depletes the soil, and won't help you grow your brand or expand your e-commerce functionality.
Ancestral agave syrup, on the other hand, is made by slowly cooking down the pure agua miel from Salmiana agaves in Hidalgo and Tlaxcala, two states that have been harvesting those plants for generations. It also won't expand your e-commerce functionality, but it will grow your brand if your brand is person who makes kick-ass margaritas or pecan pies or pancakes.
Unfortunately, the families behind this tasty stuff are being offered big beer company bucks to rip out their agave and plant barley instead. Which would be a crime, because Ancestral Agave Syrup is about as far from the processed stuff as 100% pure Vermont maple syrup is from that sticky bottle at a diner.
So, don't build a homepage from one of several easy-to-use templates, but do grab Ancestral Agave Syrup today! Our first 25 customers will also receive a special limited edition agave superhero comic book, so do not wait! Protect the land, make better drinks, and save the bats by grabbing some today.
Go to... Wait, what was that about bats?
Yeah, it's an important food source on the migration path of the Mexican long-nosed bat.
Huh.
Yeah, the flowering stalks of the agave also provide protection from predators.
Oh, well, that's cool. Should we get back to the ad now?
Yeah, let's do that. Go to ancestralagave.com or click the link in the show notes to grab some today.
Ancestral Agave Syrup. It won't help you build a beautiful website, but it will make your cocktails taste really, really good.
I want to talk real quick about something you said, and I'm sure that all spirits brands have this idea in their mind, you know, world domination, getting it behind every bar on the planet. But how does that relate back to what Luis said earlier with such a limited supply of the grapes themselves, 4,000 hectares, there's got to be a point where we're going to hit a crux where you can't, you're already supplying almost the entire supply to Bolivia, right? Over 80% of Singani drank in Bolivia is from you. Where is there a limit? Is there a ceiling? Are we even close to it? Like,
well, we're not. And the good news is even... You're right. This is not beer. This is a bespoke spirit. The good news is that the upper end of the limit, which we are prepared to push toward, it's one of the first things I talked to Luis Pablo about, which is, okay, in success, can we scale, you know, to get to a place where this is a real business? And the good news is, you know, if we maxed out Casa Real's ability to produce Singhani in the course of a year, that's a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a very good business to be in. And also, at a certain point, I think it's cool if it becomes known that, you know, there's just a finite amount yeah. of this stuff that can be had in a calendar year. That's a good thing. It's because it's yeah. special. And over time, that becomes another part of the story and another selling point.
Sure. Exclusivity and rarity are certainly things that add flavor to things all the time. Yeah. And speaking of flavor, you mentioned just now your delight every time you see someone for the first time taste the product. And we're pretty deep into the show here, and we haven't even discussed the taste. So why don't you walk our listener through, you know, someone who's maybe uninitiated and hasn't had Singhani 63, what the flavor notes are and why they should seek it out?
Well, I think the first adjective that comes up is floral. But in sort of doing our market research in the early days of the brand, it was fascinating how many different notes people were pulling out of it. We did this experiment where we had 25 people from around the country who were sent a bottle without a label on it. And they would try it on camera, and we would watch them try it. And then we would ask them, like, what notes are you pulling out? Some of them felt it was more like a gin. Somebody said, oh, it's kind of like a tequila, but a different kind of tequila. One of the things that nobody said it reminded them of was brandy, mm-hmm. as it turns out. But I found the first time I tried it, as speaking as a former vodka drinker, that there was a variety of notes. Like, the longer I held it in my mouth, it the more it would shift. I've had people say, oh, there's kind of a peppery quality.
Yeah, I get a lot of pepper, yeah.
Yeah, it's very active, very friendly. And then the big, you know, the first time I tried it, the big surprise was it just vanished when you swallowed it. There wasn't that second burn, you know, that you get when you drink hard spirits straight. And that was, I've come to believe this has to do with not only the grape and the general methods of making Singhani, but Casa Real's specific method for making Singhani, which is using the cognac copper pot stills, distilling it twice. I think Casa Real it is able to be a lot more aggressive about cutting the top and the tail off of the spirit. So you're really getting the heart of it. And it's just so smooth. I just couldn't believe how smooth it was. So it's a very approachable, and as it turns out, very versatile spirit.
Versatile for sure. I noticed that when I got my first bottle of it after tasting it, of course, I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to make with it first, but the first cocktail that because I'm a cocktail bar owner, of course, you know, most people these days, I want to talk to Luis and you about that, like the traditional way of drinking it in Bolivia. But, you know, for us, for this show right now, we're all cocktail people. So the first cocktail that I thought to make with it, because I didn't want to treat it like a gin and I didn't want to treat it like a cognac, but I realized I could. So I made a Martinez with it. So, you know, the Singhani 63 with some really good Italian vermouth. I stuck like a bar spoon of maraschino and some aromatic bitters. And it just sung. Yeah. It was like somewhere between, it had the body of a brandy, but the lightness and the freshness of a gin, you know, or a pisco, you know, and it just, it, it worked both ways. It was almost like drink somewhere between a Manhattan and a Martinez, you know, and it was delightful, you know? And so that was the moment where I was like, okay, this is a really special spirit. And there's a lot of different things, and, you know, like I did the martini test, of course, because anytime you get a clear spirit, you want to try it in a martini. Anytime we get an aged spirit, we usually start out by making an old fashioned. I made it old fashioned with it. Wow. Yeah. It's amazing. Yep. In old fashioned.
No, and it worked.
There's a lot of kind of misconceptions about making an old fashioned. It has to be aged spirits. No, it doesn't. Actually, a gin old fashioned is amazing. There's so many ways to, you know, to use this spirit. It's like you said, it's extremely versatile. And just even like in a Singani tonic, I mean, or just even a highball, just with soda water. That's the way I like to test out spirits these days. Just how does it work with soda water when there's nothing that it can hide behind? In fact, it's going to be aerated more with the seltzer water, and it really has to be top notch to perform that way and, you know, be naked, you know, and it just does all the things. It's really amazing. So
I want to loop back.
Somebody described it to us when we were taking it around in the early days as egoless.
Yeah, that's a great description.
It seems to find its place when you put it into a cocktail. If it feels like it should play tambourine, it seems content to sort of like just do that. We've seen it. We had a guy who was trying to get rid of several cases of Baijiu that his beverage director forced him to buy. And he pulled us over and he said, I've been trying to get rid of this stuff. I can't get anybody to drink it. I made a Baijiu Singani cocktail, and something in the Singani took all of the harshness out of the Baijiu. And he goes, I'm going to put this on the menu, sell those two cases of Baijiu, never buy it again. But I just wanted to thank you for solving my problem.
Well, that's amazing. I would ask, you know, I know you were on a movie set when you first tried it. Someone handed you a bottle, as the lore reads. I would ask, how did you enjoy it when you first had it? How do you like to drink it the most now? And then I would ask Luis to maybe follow up with, how do Bolivians drink Singani?
I drink it on the rocks, which I refer to as the subwoofer. that's my preferred method. That's how I had it the first time. And that's how I drink it now, because I just love the taste.
And to follow how Bolivians drink it, first of all, Singani has been part of our culture for so many centuries, even before we were founded as a country. And the thing is that here in Bolivia, we enjoy it in so many different versions. I mean, the most common is what we do is a calling glass, full ice, 1/3 of Singani and 2/3 of ginger ale. Plus, always you add lemon to it, and that's called the chufly here in Bolivia. That's the most common way to drink it. But it's very traditional. When you go to a restaurant here in La Paz, you sit down and they pour you a Singani with some type of fruit juice, and that's called a coctelito or little cocktail, kind of like an appetizer. I think that's how you call it.
Right? Are you saying in the same glass or two separate glasses, like a sangrita with tequila or mezcal?
Like in a shot, they bring a jar, a small jar, and they pour you. It's already mixed. So before you start eating, because La Paz is so high up,
little aperitif.
Yeah, it's so high up that the digestion doesn't work always. So that aperitif, that's very, very traditional here in Bolivia. We even use it And I always tell this story, and my grandmother used it for a strawberry pie recipe, even
I was gonna ask
food, even in food. So Singani lives in our everyday culture, and something I want to point out that going back to the aromas in the wine world. You use aromatic descriptors when you want to talk about a wine. And Muscat of Alexandria has its own descriptor as Moscatel. So what I'm trying to say is that Muscat of Alexandria grape has its own aromatic molecules that are very distinct. So that's why you're not going to have any other spirit like this anywhere else. And listen, I'm not trying to say this is the best spirit or
why not?
I'm saying there you go.
That makes me ask a side question. You know, the three of us, we travel all over the world and taste spirits from all over the world. And oftentimes when we go to a place and its location and its home of the spirit, so we've been talking about cognac a few times. Cognac is consumed the least in France than anywhere else in the world. Do you find that to be true of your spirit as well? Sometimes people look away from their own, not America. We drink plenty of American whiskey, but other countries sometimes look away from the thing that they make to look at things from other places. Does a lot of Singani get consumed in Bolivia is what I'm asking.
Yeah, it is the number one spirit.
Still prideful. That's good.
Yeah, it is the number one spirit still in the market. But there are other spirits coming in into the market very strong. But still, Singani is the number one. The point I was trying to make is that it's funny how this grape made all the way from Egypt, I don't know, centuries ago to Bolivia and found this place so high up in the mountains. And it's part of our is part of a culture, and it's part of, and it's not just me saying that, it's a whole country and a government that has laws in place to say what Singani, where Singani can grow, can be produced and cannot be produced. And there's 11 million Bolivians that recognize this as its own spirit. So I'm trying to say that there's more behind just the juice, you know? There's a law, there's a culture, there's beliefs and so many things behind it. So
can I ask a follow-up question to that? So as Souther mentioned, I know we all of us travel, not just the three of us on the show, a lot. To me, a lot of times whenever I go somewhere and I taste that spirit or wine or beer, whatever it might be, that's from that region of that place that's far away, and then I take it back to New York or to California, wherever I am, it's kind of hard to like tell that story. Whenever I'm giving it to someone and showing them for the first time, it's hard, you know, because it tastes different when you're having oysters mm-hmm. in like the Rhone or where, you know, wherever you might be, you know, they hit different, right? So like, I know that you had a campaign last year that I think was meant to help out with describing, and with efforts such as coming onto the show, onto the Speakeasy again. Thank you for that again. What the fuck is Singani 63 was the ad campaign or WTF yeah. is Singani 63. So I guess my question is to follow up for Souther, and I guess what I'm trying to ask is like, how do you bring that to people because without having them go to Bolivia, like, are there any kind of elemental, like experiential marketing kind of campaigns that go along with this WTF is Singani 63?
Yeah, there have been a couple of, you know, I think bedrock ideas when it comes to the marketing of it. The What the Fuck campaign grew out of, I think, an understanding that we have to, you know, think of it as you're giving a speech to articulate the elephant in the room. Like, if you want to get people engaged, you've got to say the thing that everybody's thinking that right. They didn't know they were thinking. And the bottom line, you know, for us was, having been in the market for a few years, the thing that everybody I felt wanted to say to my face, but they were too civil to do so, was, "What the fuck is 1964? So I was like, let's lean into that. Like, let's just make that part of the campaign. One of the other campaigns that we've played with is Avoid the Obvious, which is something that I've tried to follow, a principle I've tried to follow in my career. And I felt Singani really aligned with that belief that you should avoid the obvious. These are all things that are evolving and that we are trying out in different markets to see what works. But the What the Fuck campaign, I felt, had some punch because it makes people laugh. Mm-hmm. And when people are laughing, as it turns out, they're more open to something new than in any other state. If you make somebody laugh, you've surprised them. And part of them goes, "Okay, I'm going to listen to you because you surprised me. And so you must have something going on that I want to pay attention to."
Sure.
So the voice of the brand has always been cheeky.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I mean, like, I love what you said about that, because, you know, yeah, people tend to listen more once you've got them, like if they're laughing, then you've kind of like broken down their guard, you know, and then they're more open to listen after that. And I think it's an incredible campaign, because also, like, who doesn't like a campaign that has curse words in it anyway? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
we have to do, you know, we have to zig where other people are zagging. There's no other established brand that would ever do anything like that. And that's the point, you know?
Yeah, it's also a little self-effacing, right? You get to kind of take the piss out of yourself a little, which ingratiates you to other people and opens them up emotionally. And I
especially
think,
with bigger, stodgier brands, as you said, you know, they would never take a chance like that. And there's so much stuff I've been working in Brandy for the last 4 years, and, you know, and I work in Napa, and it's a Brandy distillery that's, you know, we have a tasting room in downtown Napa. And whenever I go there and teach seminars and classes to people, it's like they're coming from wineries, and wine, like the wine and spirits industry, as we call it, the wine industry side of it is really stuffy a lot of the times. But the spirits industry tends to have more fun, I've found. I think we could probably all agree there. But then, you know, there are also still those distilleries and big brands and companies, distribution companies, whatnot, that take themselves so seriously. And it's like, this is more fun. You know, we're at the end of the day, we don't go to bars. Like, we could drink at home for way less money, but it'd be way less fun. We go there to have fun. You know, and that's what these things should be. The product should be fun for the places where we go to have fun, you know? So I really appreciate, I appreciate the spirit of that spirit, if you will.
Oh, good.
Well, given your lengthy, you know, career in effectively storytelling, I'm curious, like, what part of the lift are you doing for the advertising side of the company? Are you encouraging that storytelling style? Are you encouraging, you know, those sorts of methods? I saw you had a video out some time ago where you just had clips. It looked like a self-filmed clips of people, you know, you asked them if they knew what Brandy was, I think.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's given my lack of experience when we started this, I needed to really focus on the things that I do know, which is telling stories. And And it's been my responsibility to come up with, if not, you know, all the copy, a lot of the copy and all the basic ideas of how we're going to tell the story. But that being said, you know, this, first of all, one of the reasons I like talking about Singani 63 and why I will go anywhere and talk to anyone about it, is it's not my story. And I love that. It's much more gratifying to talk about Singani and Casa Real than it is for me to talk about a movie or a show that I was involved with, which becomes kind of soul crushing. This is a fun story to tell. I love telling it. So I'm a guy with a bottle and a backpack, essentially. But also, and this is, you know, we're in an interesting period for the brand because of this issue. At the same time, this has to survive me. This can't, this ultimately has to work on its own without anybody knowing that I'm a store, or caring that I'm associated with it. So we're constantly sort of talking about finding this balance and a trajectory that over time creates, you know, a narrative of Singani 63 that really is just about Singani, and in which I'm, if people care to know, they were like, oh, he's the guy who brought it outside of Bolivia for the first time. But it shouldn't be, that foreknowledge shouldn't be necessary. This thing has to live on its own.
Right. Your goal is to almost become a footnote in the company.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's incredible. And I think one thing that I don't know, and I'm just realizing it now, as you said it, and I've said it a couple times in the show, Singani 63, where does the name even come from?
That is my lucky number. And so when we started talking about this, doing this, what we determined was we need to make a specific Singani for these purposes, to Singani 63 to be sold as a product that is not exactly like the white label or the black label Singani that is sold in Bolivia. So the distinction here is that Singani 63 is made only from the estate grapes of Casa Real. So it's kind of a turbo Singani in that regard.
Yeah, 63. And your lucky number. That's a high lucky number.
That's a high lucky number.
You know, everybody's got one. Everybody's got a lucky number.
Mine would be Singani 11. Kind of like Ocean's 11. But, you know, the cool thing about that is the label is a really fun design, too. Artwork, you know, my thing is I come from a graphic design background. And before I got into the spirits industry, I remember going into like the wine and spirit shops and looking around and making some terrible wine purchases based on the fact that the label looked really cool and designy. Yeah. And I realized the power of that. And then, you know, eventually I'm sure we can all remember about like, I don't know, around like 2010, a lot of the old label, like, whiskeys and gins, they started repackaging. Did you notice that? Like everyone started repackaging and redesigning like all at the same time.
Oh, sure. I still hate the Rittenhouse label.
Yeah.
I still think it looks like a bottle of Worcestershire sauce now.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you know, that stuff really matters. And
it does though. Yeah.
We wanted a label that was cinematic. And that also, fulfilled what I call the 60-foot rule, which is you should be able to see this thing on a shelf from 60 feet away and know exactly that it's a bottle of Singani 63. Like it has to stand out in a row of you know, other spirits. And so, yeah, we love the design. And to your point, Damon, I was the same way when I was growing up and looking for going into a store looking for wine. I went with whatever graphically appealed to me, and luckily didn't know enough to really move beyond that. But it has a huge impact. And now, of course, for me, going into a bar or a restaurant is completely ruined.
Yeah.
These are places that I used to enjoy going to. And now I can't stop looking at the back bar. I can't stop looking in the well. I want to see what's on the menu. Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? And it's shocking to me sometimes when I look at bottle designs that are interesting, but that I know from now 10 years of experience, boy, that is not a bottle design that anybody who works behind a bar wants to use.
Right.
And how important that is. Like this, it's to this day, I'm shocked. I look at something and go like, are you kidding? Like you can't pick that thing up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's massive. I think what happens a lot with these otter-shaped bottles is their goal, in my opinion, I could be wrong, but I think their goal is to not have it fit in the well in such a way that it's comfortable so that it has to stay on the back bar visible to the guest. But what unfortunately happens for these brands is we pour it into a different bottle that fits in our well, and so we're just cheating the bottle, and then you don't get that label recognition while we're pouring, yeah, you know?
Exactly.
But that's another...
You want to reduce the number of things that would make somebody say no to you.
Yeah.
Right.
To us, you know, we were very conscious of like, we got to hit all these things. It's got to be a really arresting, compelling label, the bottle shape. Initially in the very first run of Singani 63 that we got in the state, there was a sort of governor spout in the top of the bottle. Very quickly, it was explained to us that we needed to stop doing that. I want to make the yes as easy as possible.
Yeah, that governor just tells me you don't want me to sell your product quickly.
Yeah.
You want me to sell it slowly.
Or break the top of the bottle off.
Yeah, exactly. Ridiculous. So Singani's been around since 2014. Is that correct? Is that what I'm gathering? So since 2014, are you, I only know of one other brand. Are you the main importer of Singani to the United States? I mean, you've got to be.
Well, I think, yeah, there are some other Singanis in the market. And we want there to be other Singanis,
right? Because a high tide raises all boats, right?
Yeah, and it's also if it feels like we're the only people out there, and you've got this shelf in a store that has this new category, it says Singani, and there's just the one model. Like over time, I think if you're a retailer, you're wondering, is this like what's going on here?
Sure.
But as these other Singanis discovered, it's hard to bring spirit to market, especially in the U.S.
It's the worst.
And it's not for the faint of heart. And what's, you know, for us, the tricky part is everything is sort of a la carte. You know, we go state by state. We're in the U.K. We're in the Caribbean. We got there because somebody from those places tasted Singani and said, we want it. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of partnership and passion that you need if you're going to break into another market. We don't have the resources to just roll up somewhere outside the U.S. From scratch. We need partners who come to us and say, if you bring this here, we will do X for you. And so that's what's happened. We've gotten calls from a lot of different countries, especially after the TTB announcement, and we can't afford to go there. Like we can't open up that many fronts. I think there's huge potential for Singani in Asia, Japan, especially. We've had inquiries from Japan. It's just,
Grow organically and slow and fulfill orders rather than take too many orders and not be able to fulfill, right?
Well, Simon Ford said to us at Tales of the Cocktail the first year we were there, don't confuse expansion with growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I've committed that to memory.
He's a pretty clever fellow. Speaking of Tales of the Cocktail, do you make your presence known at other conventions throughout the country and the world? And also, have you gotten any awards from, say, LA Spirits Comp or San Francisco Spirits Comp, et cetera? Have you put your hat in those rings?
Yeah, I mean, we have to be smart about that because they take up a lot of time for the team. It's still a pretty small company. And so it becomes a kind of rolling conversation about, well, we can't do all of them. Which one do we want to do this year? Kind of thing. There's an event happening in Europe this year that we're talking about. I think it's in Germany. It's like a BCB in Germany. Mm-hmm. And there's no question at some point we have got to have a plan for Europe. And so Tales, you know, we feel like for us to do BCB and Tales in the same year is a bit of a big order for us. So I think there'll probably be some checkerboarding there. But we're kind of taking that as it goes. We've gotten some nice, and I'd have to go look them up. We've gotten some nice attention from various, you know, what do you call them, contests or where you submit your spirit and maybe you win an award. But off the top of my head, I can't think of one that everybody would go, oh my God, you won that. And I don't know how long you're eligible for these things.
I mean, forever. I'm a judge on a few of them, and you can submit year after year after year, forever if you want to. LA Spirits is New Orleans Spirit Comp is mostly craft and smaller companies, but even there, some larger, well established and older brands will submit from time to time just to reestablish their ranking, et cetera. But you can do it forever. It's not like you have to do it when you're new.
Well, on our sell sheet, we have a very large logo for the Double Plutonium Award. Which doesn't exist.
Yeah,
it's impressive.
Congratulations on that.
You got the double. Yeah. The single's good. The double is where.
Yeah, no, we're actually the only people to have won it.
Awesome. So, do you have Singani at Amore Margo?
I do. Yeah, we do.
I was going to say this is like perfect for Amore Margo.
Yeah, it's not on the current menu. We're still in the depths of cold weather, winter, and we consider the lighter spirits more for our spring summer menus. But we've had it on the menu in the past, and it's. My bar, I've jokingly said for over a decade now, there's no better place to get an education than at a bar. And if that's true, Amore Margo is somewhat of a university level. So we're kind of in the business at my bar of educating people all the time. So we definitely talk about everything that goes across that bar. So it's, for us, it's old hat. Do you find that it's a hurdle to overcome to get other bartenders on board with spreading the gospel and not only spreading the gospel, but doing it evangelically, like with the correct knowledge, right?
That has turned out to be not an obstacle because people that are that, embedded in this universe really like the spirit and really like the story. The tricky part, once you've kind of persuaded the industry, is the consumer. I mean, this is the last 10-foot problem that you've got to figure out, and that includes retail. We just last year were able to come to an arrangement with, for instance, Total Wine. And that's, that's huge. I mean, think of how many people approach Total Wine to get on a shelf in their store. Mm-hmm. And so it's just now, act two is really getting the consumer to ask, what the fuck is Singani 63? Because you can, there talk about a ceiling. If all you've been able to do is get the mixology community to support you. And that's a fantastic thing. But if that's where it ends, you don't have a business.
Yeah.
Not a big enough business to sustain itself. So we're constantly, and we're seeing more of that now, but the goal is, and I'm also aware that, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, mezcal had been around for a while, and then suddenly people were walking into bars asking for it.
Right. Well, I think you're right at the sort of tail end of the comet on the old adage of it takes a decade to be an overnight success, right?
Yeah.
So you've been out there grunting it out for a decade, and now it's becoming more and more known. And I would assume that in short order, a couple of years, maybe people will be like, yeah, Singani, it's this new thing that we love. And we've right. been around at that point for 12 years, you know, and it'll seem very overnight to the onlooker. But
wasn't Willie Nelson like in his 50s when he had his first hit? I mean,
yeah.
something like that. But, yeah. you know, like I was saying at the top of the show, I've certainly seen its growth, you know, with just my own experience. So I know you've been out there really hitting it hard, and you guys are doing a great job of growing this brand and this category outside of Bolivia. So, I mean, kudos to you. And one big part of that too is that, you know, being able to get it in places where you know, you've got, it's available now on buysingani63.com. So like people can go to the website and grab a bottle. I've seen it, you know, I still see it come up in press a lot, you know, like in Vibe magazine. I know recently mm-hmm. I saw it in there. So, I mean, these are all great things, and, you know, it's the visibility is definitely growing. And I mean, it wouldn't do that if the product wasn't good, you know, I mean,
exactly.
So, I mean, you know, I know it's been a huge growth period for you over the past decade and 100 years as well for the distillery. So, I mean, it's just exciting to see what's going to happen with the next 10 years, the next 100 years for Singani yeah. as a category, and Singani 63 as the kind of the flagship leader in the, you know, the world market for this category of spirit. And like I said, I'm a huge brandy fan. I'm a big brandy nerd. And I just think that it's, you can't get a more classic spirit. You know, it's literally like the oldest spirit that's been yeah. continuously produced. I mean, and it's all of its different styles and variations. And this one is so cool because it is a cognac still, and it is distilled twice like cognac. I mean, so there's some cool things that make it stand out in the kind of canon of Singani as a spirit category, but there's so many no-brainers right in front of your face about this spirit, you know, about Singani 63, where you're like, holy shit, what the fuck is it? That's what it is. And I want it. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, very cool stuff. And I know we're at time here. I know that we have, there's some really amazing stuff on your social media feed for Singani 63. I mean, people can go check it out. But, you know, like Souther was saying, like you were saying, Stephen, go to your bar. Go and ask yeah. your bartender about it, and they're going to know. And if they don't have it, just keep asking for it, and eventually they'll get it.
Well, if they don't have it, you'll spark their curiosity, and yes. hopefully they'll go out and get a hold of it, and then they can have something to share with their guests.
No, that's what every account wants, is people coming in and asking for it. And in fact, one of our other campaigns was, ask your bartender if Singani 63 is right for you. you know, but you're right. I mean, it's got, that's, you have to get to that point. And, you know, we're keeping our head down and our feet moving.
Yeah, well, I do kind of want to ask, now that you've rolled that boulder all the way up the hill and you've gotten the TTB to acknowledge it, and you're onto, you said at the top of the show, Act Two, what does Act Two have in store? I mean, are we moving away from the educational phase of just telling people what this spirit is and kind of getting people more excited about the specifics of Singani 63 or the different ways that you can use it? Or is have we moved past the initial making sure people know what this is phase and into the next phase of whatever? I guess what I'm asking is to reveal just enough of your business plan for 2024 as you feel comfortable with. Well, and tell us what's coming next.
Like most business plans, It's all about growth. And so, you know, what we want to do is get it to a place where it becomes attractive to a potential partner. Because what I need is infrastructure. I need to hook into a pre-existing infrastructure that allows us to go anywhere we want to go and have the support to make it work. It's generally understood what that range is in terms of case numbers. So our near-term goal over the next 2 to 3 years is to hit that metric and start conversations with people who can really, you know, inject some accelerant into the brand. Because it is at a certain point, I can only, you know, sustain it at a certain level. And to go to really blow it out, I'm going to need a partner. So Act Two is becoming a brand that somebody kicks the tires on and goes, I like this.
Right.
Again, we want to run it the way we're running it. I want more resources and more infrastructure so I can go to Asia, for instance.
Well, sure. If anyone who fits that bill is listening, get in touch with us. We will only take a modest cut here at this point.
Just a trip to Bolivia.
Yeah, we're easy to buy over. You don't need to go break the bank to win our favor. If someone like that, or for that matter, any of our listeners wanted to get in touch with you and keep up with what you're doing, where would be the best spot to follow you on social media, keep up with your stuff, maybe get some Singani 63 of their own?
Yeah, I mean, there are multiple paths toward getting a hold of us. But I think probably the most direct would be through, you know, one of our social media accounts, either the Facebook or Instagram. Those are pretty active. But it's like I said, we just got to keep doing what we're doing. The trajectory is looking good. Especially, as I said, last year was one of our best years ever. And that's in the face of overall the industry not going up as much. So it was, you know, to have a year where you're up 40% and not a lot of other people are, that's a good year. Yeah. Now the question is, can you keep doing that?
Yeah, for sure. That's insane. I mean, like everything since 2021 has been down in the spirits world. So to be up 40% over a fiscal year, that's incredible. Yeah, congratulations on that. Wow. Insane.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, cool. Guys, I know you're busy. You got to get out there and sell some more Singani 63 and maybe get around to
and drink some more.
I was going to say, I think drink.
But it's been a real pleasure having both of you on, having you back on, Stephen and Luis. It's been great chatting with you. I know you're all the way in Bolivia right now, so we really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show, both of you for that matter. And for all of our many listeners out there, you know, go find your Singani 63 at the store, ask for it at the bar, make a Martinez cocktail with it.
Check it out. You mentioned it earlier, but I want to mention it again. Check it out at buysingani63.com. That's BUYSINGANI63.com. And then the socials are Singani63, Instagram and Facebook. So you can follow along with the shenanigans. You know, I encourage bartenders who are listening who've never tried it to get a hold of some and you know, open up a new door for your, you know, put a new weapon in your arsenal behind the bar. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, cool. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Thanks again, guys, for being on the show. Happy New Year to everyone, and thanks again for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Click on the Beating Heart to donate to the station and check out any of our archived many, many episodes. We've been doing this for over 13 years.
That's right.
Almost 700 episodes, I think. Something like that. I can't believe it. I know that, you know, there's been a lot of really great guests that we've had on this show, in the studio and remotely. And I just want to say thanks again for coming on the show, guys. And until next time we meet, I hope we can see each other at one of these great bars that we've mentioned and conferences. and have a Singani together. And until then, cheers, everyone.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you so much. So you don't shun
the devil with your rock. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.